The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Pat, a new report today from CyberSafe Kids gives a damning insight into children's vulnerability online. About a quarter of 8 to 12-year-olds reported being bothered by harmful content or by unsolicited contact while they were online. And the report by Ireland's online safety charity also found that a huge number of kids don't talk to their parents about their online activity. Joining me now to dissect the report is Alex Cooney, who's CEO and co-founder of CyberSafe Kids. I'm also joined by Adrian Weckler, technology editor with the Irish Independent, and teacher and Irish Examiner columnist Jennifer Horgan. Morning, folks. I might start, Alex, with you to give us a bit more detail on what the report found.
Yes, good morning. So this is based on a survey that we run over the course of the academic year. So this is the eighth time, in fact, that we've done this. And it's based on over 7,000 responses from children in primary school. So most of the data is children in primary school, so 8 to 12-year-olds in third to sixth class. And then we have 12 to 14-year-olds in secondary school, which is a smaller number, 1,300 responses from them. And essentially what we're seeing is that children are extremely active online. You know, they're very likely to have their own smart device. So what's in the younger years, more likely to be a games console or a tablet than a smartphone. But the smartphone ownership rises from the age of 11. They're very active on social media, despite minimum age restrictions that are in place. So 82% of children in the 8 to 12 category had their own social media or instant messaging account. You know, we look at what they're doing online, so what they're sort of primarily interested in doing, the apps and games that they're using online, the ones that are the most popular, and some of these more negative experiences, as you highlighted there in the introduction.
Talk to us about the negative experiences, because the numbers are fairly stark.
Yeah, so about a quarter of the children that we surveyed overall in both the age categories, actually, the primary and secondary school, had been bothered by something that they had seen online over the last, or seen or experienced online over the last year. And we defined bothered as something that upset them, scared them, or made them wish they hadn't seen it. So we ask a follow-on question then to understand what they did after that happened. And we see that children, in some cases, are not telling anyone about this. So over a third, in both cases, primary and secondary school children, kept it to themselves. And then we asked a new follow-on question this year. So this is kind of new information about where they had seen this content. And for primary school children, it was primarily on YouTube and Roblox. And then for secondary school children, it was more likely to be Snapchat and TikTok. So it's really helpful to have that insight into kind of where they are seeing this stuff that's bothering them. And also to, I suppose it tallies with where they're more likely to be online at that age. But it's a really helpful insight. And then the other negative experience that we look at is cyberbullying. So we don't use the term cyberbullying. We break it down into different experiences online. And again, it's about 25% of children in the primary school age category. And that rises quite significantly in secondary school, which is a trend we saw last year as well. So we see 38% of children in that first and second year group who are telling us that they had an experience of this, at least one experience of this online. And girls in both age categories were far more likely to be impacted by cyberbullying than boys for some reason.
Is that bullying by peers?
It's primarily bullying by peers, as far as we can tell, yeah.
You talked about a third of third of the children who had a negative experience online kept it themselves and didn't tell anybody about it. What about the general norms of children talking to their parents about online behaviour in general? So even if they haven't had a negative or damaging experience, are kids talking to their parents? Is anybody guiding them?
So we're sort of surprised by this, because we're seeing these numbers go down rather than up, which given the profile of this topic, I mean, I think we're talking about it a lot more, both in the kind of in the media, but also in things like schools. And yet we're not seeing this number going up, which is worrying. So still, most children do talk to a parent or a trusted adult. So in the primary school age groups, that's 58%. But that number has gone down from previous years. So that's the concern. And then in secondary school, the first and second years reports, only two-thirds of them are having regular conversations with a parent or a trusted adult. So that engagement that is so vital here is not as widespread as we'd like it to be, for sure.
Well, let's go to Jennifer Horgan, because she's an Irish Examiner columnist and a teacher, to get a sense of how that actually manifests then in the schools. Jennifer, what do you see?
Morning, Anton. I think, look, like with everything in schools, it varies very much between schools and it depends on the school approach. In many schools, you know, teachers and principals are really making an effort and, you know, SPHE, a lot of discussions will take place. But I do, like this year, last year, I spoke with my students a lot about reducing their screen time. And I was surprised by the level of kickback from them. And there was very much a sense of, you gave us these things. Like, you put these phones in our hands when we were 11 years old. And now you're telling me, you know, you're trying to bring in these rules and tell me all about the dangers. So I think young people do feel that there's a certain level of hypocrisy in that, you know, broadly, parents are handing these devices to children, you know, as young as nine, even younger in some cases. And then we're sort of trying to have these kind of follow-up conversations about the dangers and the rules and regulations around it. So it does feel like these conversations are happening too late, unfortunately. But what I do think is important is that young people feel like they're part of the solution, which is why I was a bit annoyed by Norma Foley's, you know, announcement of the ban on schools, because I don't think that works. I think it's much better to work with, you know, each school working with their community, with their parents, with their students, and really making it a sort of a community effort rather than, you know, something that's sort of fear laden and taboo and you know, that young people then feel like they kind of have to hide things from their parents and their teachers.
Well, in that context, what do you make of the findings that show that for some young people, they don't even have to bother hiding it from their parents because their parents are taking no active engagement at all in what they're doing online?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, unfortunately. I think our parenting, there's a stark difference in how we deal with, you know, our children's behaviour beyond the home and then within the home. So parents seem to be most concerned with knowing where their children are at all times, who they're with and what they're doing. So there's a lack of freedom for young people beyond the home. You know, certainly when I was 11 or 12, I was roaming until dinner time. And I know that sounds kind of cliched, but I did have a lot of kind of physical freedom. I think we're taking that away from children more and more. And we're, you know, maybe it's a guilt thing because we're busy working, but we want to know that they can ring us or call us and message us from wherever. And yet, when they're inside the home and when they're up in their bedrooms, we are giving them absolutely free rein because we have this idea that they're physically safe. And so their social, emotional, psychological health, you know, it doesn't... I think, look, this is all new to us. So, you know, a generation ago, if they were physically safe, they were safe. So I think our instinct isn't as sharp as it should be. And I've sympathy for that as a parent myself. I'm struggling. But, you know, we really do need to catch up.
Adrian Weckler, the technology editor with the Irish Independent, is with us as well. Adrian, what of the danger to kids of being in a situation where they are exposed to social media driven by an algorithm that finds the things that maybe offend them or that scare them or that obsess them and just keeps feeding it to them?
Yeah, it's a very, very, very significant problem. It's an epochal issue that we haven't really faced before about 6 or 7 years ago. I should say, CyberSafe Kids, this survey on which it's based, it is absolutely to be commended that this is conducted. This is one of the very few, if maybe the only evidence-based research we have as to what kids actually do and what parents actually think. So like some of the figures that you've gone through there, for example, 59% of 11-year-olds own a smartphone. That's up 7% since a year ago. 74% of Irish 12-year-olds own a smartphone. Now, we need to really take stock of what that is telling us. And that is telling us that within ordinary Irish families, a child having a smartphone, or certainly a young teenager having a smartphone, is now an absolutely normal part of Irish family life. We can't really get away from that. Like, there's an awful lot of preaching and hypothesizing about, you know, what we should do and what we can do. We should talk to the parents and talk to the kids about all this more. At the moment, the news narrative is an awful lot around banning smartphones and banning social media for under 16s. We've had Health Minister Stephen Donnelly talk about that, the Irish Medical Organization. Those bans are almost impossible. On both social media and smartphones to introduce. The Australian e-safety commissioner is really struggling, even with an age verification system, which is really the most realistic thing that we should be aiming for, how to actually, you know, curb the excesses or the worst services and the worst content being seen by kids. But we really need to get a dose of reality in this discussion. I think Jennifer's point was excellent in terms of parental involvement. And I think that's where we need to be going.
But can I ask you, if you look at the evidence that we have seen about the capacity for exposure to misinformation, disinformation, and uncontrolled or unregulated algorithms. Christopher Wise's Cambridge Analytica book and the congressional report into the 2016 election, the UK report into Brexit, we've seen what can happen with adults having untrammeled access to social media. And they are adults who we think can critically think and be able to assess the information in front of them. What hope for kids?
Well, I mean, that is an absolutely excellent point, because if you look at the effect that misinformation, disinformation algorithms are having, on the one hand, if you ask those same adults, knowing that there is misinformation and disinformation in algorithms, are they willing to have those platforms banned? Overwhelmingly, most of them will say no. Like, we need to have a nuanced grown-up conversation about what we're talking about here. We're in an internet era. Unless we're actually talking about going back and banning the internet per se, we can't have that binary discussion anymore. So in Europe, for example, we have the Digital Services Act, we have the Digital Markets Act, you know, there'll be a code of conduct coming in. They may, or they probably will, make things somewhat better. There may be enhanced age verification systems. They may get better. We're seeing like some countries like France and Brazil are really pushing it. So France, as you know, arrested the owner of Telegram, which is a totally different conversation, because that's a totally different setup to Meta or X and the others. A lot of illegal activity, according to Irish and UK authorities there. And Brazil is going after disinformation aggressively, to the point where it has now banned X. So that is the spectrum. That's the conversation that we're having. It's part of the same conversation. And we need to have a balanced conversation about this.
We're going to be picking up on the ban of X in Brazil later on with Jess Kelly and getting into the weeds of some of that. Let me go back to Alex Cooney, CEO and co-founder of CyberSafe Kids, to what Adrian Weckler is saying there, Alex. Is that the answer? Does responsibility lie in parents engaging and having a grown-up conversation with their kids and with the teachers?
So parents are absolutely critical, a critical factor in all of this, for sure. I mean, they're the primary influence in children's lives. But I think we need to come at this from a number of different angles. So parenting is one key angle. And one of the things that we say is, if children are ill-equipped and unprepared for being online, you know, there are going to be problems. You've got to support children to be safe online. You've got to educate them, have these regular conversations, put those boundaries in place. These are really, really important strategies in keeping children safe online. But on the other side of it, you also have to look at the online spaces that they're inhabiting and look at how their experiences, which is of course what this survey is showing us, some of these experiences that they're having online. And we need to look at how we can ensure children are going to be safer there. And I do put that on the tech companies. I think that is an enormous
just a line has broken up.
My concern at the moment. Oh, sorry.
No, you're back. Go ahead. Your concern at the moment.
Yeah. Apologies. So my concern at the moment is that, yes, we have regulation. We have the Online Safety and Media Regulation Act. We have the Digital Services Act. But it doesn't go far enough, because what we're seeing is companies like Roblox are falling below the radar. You know, who is regulating the likes of Roblox, which is an enormously popular platform with children? It doesn't come under our national legislation. It doesn't meet the threshold of a very large online platform for the Digital Services Act. So what we need to ensure is that we're capturing all these online environments that children are in. We are going to need age verification. We're going to need to ensure that children are protected from some of this, the more adult content online. It is absolutely crazy that a child of 10 could sign up today with a fake age and access the likes of Pornhub. You know, so we do really need to create proper barriers online for children and do a lot more to educate and support them.
And presumably do this cohesively. I mean, Jennifer Horgan, as a teacher, it is very difficult for one set of parents to individually put in place an approach to online behaviour if their child is then going into a school where completely different norms apply, I assume.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the big issues we're having. You know, I once taught a class and there was one child in the room who didn't have a mobile phone, and she was obviously made to feel very odd, you know. So it is absolutely the norm in secondary school that every child will have a phone. And I see the vast difference, you know, in how parents approach it. I have children coming in falling asleep because they've been in their rooms online all night long. And I mean all night long. That's the biggest distraction to learning, that they're just too tired. I have other parents then who will have very strict limits on the amount of time that they're spending. But I notice some students will be very happy to tell their peers that's what happens in their house, you know, and other students will be much more wary because obviously, you know, so it's a whole, it's become such an issue in terms of relationships between students in the classroom. And so I love what's happening, let's say, in Wicklow and Waterford, where they are introducing these charters and they're working so that if you're a parent in, you know, of a class, you know that the other parents are with you, or at least 15 or 16 of them are with you, so that when your child comes back and says, oh, Johnny has a phone, blah, 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 or Johnny's allowed to play, whatever, you can say, well, no, actually, I know that there are plenty of other parents in that room who, you know, so it's that coming together as a community that's really going to put a dent in this, I think. And it's just wonderful to have people like Alex and CyberSafe Kids and Adrian, who knows what he's talking about, you know, to have these conversations and just for all of us to kind of just speak openly about our worries, our fears, our limitations, because parenting is tough and we're all stretched and we want to do a good job, but we don't always know how. And so we really are going to have to rely on one another.
Well, you talked about kids arriving into school exhausted. A text say, Anton, my daughter is part of a first year Snap group. Her phone locks at 9 p.m, but there are Snap notifications up to midnight and beyond, as I have access on my phone also, and I see them. Parents are pontificating about controls, etc., but in reality, there are very little controls put in place. Adrian, can I go back to you on something? There is a sort of a sense that the tech companies, and particularly the social media giants, find it hard to regulate content and that it's anathema to them. They have given very clear evidence that when it is something that would affect their pocket, like copyright infringement, or when it is something that might affect their capacity to be prosecuted, like child pornography, they can regulate aggressively and effectively. Why do we not make them do it in a wider context than those two things?
Because we don't want to upload our own passports. So if someone were to tell you that the one of the strongest ways, for example, to ensure that children do not access, you know, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, then one of the strongest ways is to introduce legislatively or strong regulatory rules mandating age verification and identification. And up until now, if we are honest with ourselves, we are not willing to do that. We're not willing to do that. So that leaves, in general, we're not willing to do that. So that leaves the big tech companies, who, by the way, profit from kids online. This is not some sort of whitewashing exercise for the likes of Meta or Google. They make a lot of money from kids being online. And so you're right in saying that they're only semi-motivated to do something about this. But the problem that they have is, at the moment, the age verification controls, you know, you have to be 13 to access most of these services. So they just allow you to input whatever age you want on sign up. Now, there are some further age verification controls. If you put in your age as being 11 or 12 and you try to modify that, there are stronger controls then. But in general, without some sort of, you know, mandated, probably from a legislative point of view, for us all to verify ourselves.
But surely, Adrian, there has to be a halfway house. I mean, if you have an algorithm
that is... What is the halfway house then?
Well, if you have an algorithm that is finding the cookies that somebody in, so that you're able to trace them beyond their activity on your site, or even just look at the activity on your site, you have to be able to infer demographic data into somebody's behavior. If you look at an IP address and you say, well, this person is accessing cartoons, they're accessing things to do with Roblox, they're accessing all of the stuff that is to do with being young, and they're doing it at a time that shows that they're not in school, they're doing it between 3 and 8 p.m., they don't have activity at 1 o'clock in the morning. That has to be a way that you could say, the big flags, this looks like a young person.
Yeah, absolutely. And what the tech companies will do, if you talk to Meta, they've pages and pages on their terms and conditions and their help site saying that that's exactly what they do. And TikTok, they try to infer from your activity, from stuff you do, even from connections that you make, that you might be under 13. And then they raise red flag. The absolute best that can do is to try to mitigate it. We can't, but there is no foolproof way of stopping kids getting on. And the number one reason for that is because parents give their kids phones. 59% of 11-year-olds have smartphones. How do you legislate against that?
Adrian, thank you very much. That's Adrian Weckler, technology editor with the Irish Independent. And big thank you as well to Irish Examiner columnist and teacher Jennifer Horgan, and of course to Alex Cooney, Alex being the CEO and co-founder of CyberSafe Kids. And CyberSafe Kids is the organisation that has published that research today. A text agreeing with what Adrian has just said. Good morning. Handing an 8-year-old smartphone is like handing an 8-year-old 20 years ago a pornographic magazine. It's as simple as that. Proper parenting is the key. No smartphones until at least 16 or older, with supporting sex education. Another, why is it impossible to ban smartphones? No one is saying ban the internet, but don't give kids a device that they can keep in their pockets and have access to anything they want. We need more education for parents and children on how to navigate the internet. However, the government can bring in legislation to ban the sale of smartphones, just like they did with cigarettes and with alcohol, to people under a certain age. This would be a huge help for parents. Sure, some might still get their hands on them, but the majority won't.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.